welcome to North Coast Church. Today, Pastor Chris Brown is bringing the teaching to you, so open up your Bibles and listen in.
He was by far one of the most classic characters when I was little. The funnest craft probably any Sunday school teacher ever put on the table. He had all the songs written about him. I even called my mom up today and said, "Hey, Mom, how did that one go?" And my mom just started singing, "Oh, the Lord told to Noah to build him an ark." I'm not singing the rest of it. But you get to the part where the animals come in by Tuesday, and then if you had a real creative Sunday school teacher like I did, my mom, growing up, she would say, "Now, go around the room and act out your favorite animal," and that's when we could all become monkeys, and it was the right thing to do. And this character, Noah, as a child, it seems like whether you grew up in church or not, it is one of the most famous children's stories, i.e. fairy tales, of all time. And that's the problem we're going to run into today. When we're going to dig into 2.5 chapters of it, immediately there are going to be some of you going, "Really? Shouldn't you send this over to the kindergarten and first grade classroom? I mean, they can color the guy in the boat and make all the animal crafts. It'll be fun." But as adults, let's get on to some stuff that we can actually understand and deal with better than just kindergarten fairy tales. And I want to put that on the table right from the bat, because when I take the next 2 hours and we go through the story of Noah, I want you guys, oh, there will be a day. We've come close. I want you guys to understand this story was not meant for children. It is one of the most violent. It is one of the most tragic. It is a story filled with more heartache, despair, judgment, anguish, and pain than almost any other story in the Bible. Noah and the ark. And yet when you say that, you immediately go to children's story. You immediately go to the little wooden boat that you got to color with crayons and the little bearded guy looking out the window and there was a rainbow and it was kind of a cool story. Maybe you had the little Fisher Price set where the boat would actually split open and you had the animals that can go in. We had the Weeble set as well. Never mixed the two. They didn't fit in the slot right. But I mean, Noah's ark was this childhood fixation. And yet I'm going to tell you today, I believe with all my heart, it was a real story. For a couple reasons. This story, I want you to pay attention to as we get into it, is going to give you so much detail, not just about the specifics of the ark itself, but the time and the place, specific frames that cover the years, the dates, the days, the months that are given. With such detail, if this wasn't a literal event, the Bible has gone overboard on this one. 2.5 chapters to try to deceive us incredibly well. If it was just, "Hey, Moses is writing saying, once upon a time, let me tell you about a guy named Noah and his boat, and it was a great little story and parable," maybe you could sit back and go, was it supposed to be literal? Was it figurative? Was it just a narrative that was passed on? But as we're about to read and look at, I want you to pay attention when you hear it, how specific the Bible is in the details of what actually happened. Down to the very days. And that I struggle with. Here's something else for those of you on the fence about Noah and a boat and did it really happen. Noah is mentioned also in the book of Ezekiel, in Isaiah, in the Chronicles, in Matthew, in Luke, in 1 Peter, in 2 Peter, and in the book of Hebrews. That's pretty good for a fictional character. To make all those biblical stories, all of those different texts, 2,000 years later after Moses writes, he's still being written about. My third thing thrown in is this guy Jesus really believed Noah was a historical character, referred to him two different times. In fact, when Jesus was asked, if you were here last week, you may remember, Jesus was asked about when he's going to come back. If you really think you're the Son of God and you're going to return one day, when? And he went back and relied on the story of Noah. He says, just as it was in the days of Noah, so it will be when the Son of Man comes back. So if nothing else convinced me, if Jesus walked around really believing in Noah, I'm going to put my chips on Jesus every time. But I want to start out with this. I want to debug some stuff. I want to get to a place and go, man, there is a lot here I don't know. And I want to point out a couple things for those of you that are professional churchgoers that may shock you that aren't in the story of Noah that you would swear were in the story of Noah. So to begin, Genesis chapter 6. We're going to start at verse 14. We're going to do some reading here. Genesis 6:14. very beginning of the Bible, 6 pages in, our study through this book of Genesis, the beginning or the origins of all things, we have this story. If you weren't here last week, you were really lucky. We hit the weirdest passage in the Bible, and we got through it. But it got to a point where God said the entire world is corrupt. Every thought of every man's heart is evil. There's violence all over the place. The heroes are fallen people. And it said it grieved God that he made man. God was broken that there was even man on the earth. For over 1,600 years, he had watched the genealogy, if you will, since Adam. For 1,600 years, God has watched nothing but wickedness upon wickedness upon wickedness. And he brings the story to Noah, said Noah was righteous and blameless among the people of his time. So God went to him and said, Noah, I'm doing a do-over. I'm hitting a reset button, if you will. I'm going to create a flood. I'm calling you to be a preacher of righteousness for 120 years in building this boat. 120 years, the project he gave Noah. And here are the specifics. Genesis 6:14. So make yourself an ark of cypress wood, make rooms in it, and coat it with pitch inside and out. And this is how you are to build it. The ark is to be 450 feet long, 75 feet wide, 45 feet high. Make a roof for it and finish the ark with it 18 inches of the top. Put a door in the side of the ark and make lower, middle, and upper decks. I'm going to bring floodwaters on the earth to destroy all the life under the heavens. Every creature that has breath of life in it, everything on earth will perish. But I will establish my covenant with you, and you will enter the ark. You and your sons and your wife and your sons' wives with you. You are to bring into the ark two of all living creatures, male and female, to keep them alive with you. Two of every kind of bird, of every kind of animal, of every kind of creature that moves along the ground will come to you to be kept alive. You are to take every kind of food that is to be eaten and store it away as food for you and for them. And Noah did everything just as God commanded him. The first thing I want to give you is a picture, which is going to be different than what you colored if you went to church as a little kid. It was such a cool little ship. Pointy on the front, had a bow, had a stern, has cool little windows on top. But if you just take the dimensions and what was built here and realize Noah couldn't have possibly gone to a shipbuilding school. There are no boats going on. What Noah built was a huge barge. It was simply a huge rectangle, a floating barge. So if you want to get a picture in your head, maybe different than what you grew up with, I asked our video team, hey, here's the specs, here's the dimensions, can you put something together, show us what it's like, really as accurate as we can. Here's what the ark looked like. So, if you watch the screen, it would have looked almost exactly like this. In a children's story for adults, you have the Genesis Project. We've got a huge rectangle, 450 feet long, 45 feet high, 75 feet wide. It's got three different floors in it, we just read that. Which means the total capacity is about 100,000 square feet. Over 20 basketball courts, end to end, could have been laid in and across this thing on each floor. 570 container cars would have fit in this. 1.5 million cubic feet of space inside. And if you put it in Qualcomm, it would have looked... Past end zone to end zone in the middle of the Chargers stadium. Maybe the best thing that happened to them this season. The arc lands... We need an act of God out here. This thing is mammoth. This thing is huge. And this idea of a boat with a pointy end. Remember, there's no rudder. There's no steering wheel. This thing wasn't meant to go anywhere. It was simply meant to float. So many people have got to the building of this, the size of this, and realized there was not a boat that equaled the size of the ark built until 1853. And people go, couldn't have happened, couldn't have done it. And yet most people are thinking of a ship. When you look at this, God said, here's what you're laying out. You're basically laying out a floating barge. It's got one door. You got 18 inches of ventilation all the way around the top. But you are building a huge floating barge. And I loved how specific it was. I love that we're using wood that floats and wood that's not going to rot. I love that God said, Noah, you have no clue what you're getting into, but you're going to cover it with pitch on the outside and the inside. We're going to double insulate this to protect it from the time it's going to be in the water and probably also from the inside, from the animals of it trying to eat through it as it goes. And we've got this giant floating barge, different than what I colored with the little bearded dude smiling out the window at the rainbow as a little kid. I'm going to give you some specifics about the size of this, about what could have fit into it. But on with the story so we can come back to what we don't know. Chapter 7. So once this barge is built, 120 years to make it, the Lord then said to Noah, "Go into the ark, you and your whole family, because I have found you righteous in this generation. Take with you seven of every kind of clean animal, male and its mate, and two of every kind of unclean animal, a male and its mate, and also seven of every kind of bird, male and female, to keep their various kinds alive throughout the earth. 7 days from now, I will send rain on the earth for 40 days and 40 nights, and I will wipe from the face of the earth every living creature I have made." And Noah did all that the Lord commanded him. Now Noah was 600 years old when the floodwaters came on the earth. And Noah and his sons and his wife and his sons' wives entered the ark to escape the waters of the flood. Pairs of clean and unclean animals, of birds, and of all creatures that move along the ground, male and female, came to Noah. You might want to circle and underline that. He didn't go out and herd these things all up. They came to Noah and entered the ark, as God has commanded Noah. And after 7 days, the floodwaters came on the earth. And in the 600th year of Noah's life, on the 17th day of the second month, on that day, all the springs of the great deep burst forth, and the floodgates of heaven were opened, and rain fell on the earth 40 days and 40 nights. Let me go to what we don't know. A whole lot here. What we don't know about the flood. The Bible makes it clear that water came down and that the recesses of the earth also came up. It was a top and bottom. We're not sure out of that exactly how it happened. Many people have come and said the earth before this had a greenhouse type effect. When you go back to Genesis 1 and 2, it talked about the waters above the earth, that they must have made this sort of greenhouse effect. It's why the people lived in hundreds of years of age. It's why you didn't have the incredible solar rays. You didn't have the seasonal aspect going on. Anyone who's ever grown anything knows you get a perfect greenhouse going, oh, you can grow something way beyond what you could do on the outside world. And especially when it's not affected by seasons. And many people come and say, well, that's what why we can understand all the long age and the long life before this. It also helps put into fact the extinction. Boy, if that greenhouse effect is done, then no matter what Noah took with him on that ark, by the time those animals were out, the lifespan of those or dinosaurs would have quickly been extinguished. Maybe. We don't know. Many people say this was the first time it ever rained. How many of you, by the way, in every venue, we're going to do a couple of these. How many of you heard in the story of Noah and the ark that this was the first time it had ever rained? Some of you are like, oh, now I know you're tricking me. I'm not going. I was always taught this was the first rain. The Bible doesn't say it was the first rain. He just says, I'm going to bring rain. It might have been raining before that. Maybe the greenhouse effect made it where it didn't have to rain. We have no clue. What we have is God saying this is going to be a catastrophic geological tragedy from the heavens and from the earth in such a proportion that no one has ever seen. And Noah, you're in the boat, and God shut the door, and for 7 days they stayed inside. And when that rain started to come and 40 days of flooding, you see, in our own life, we've seen the tragedies of the hurricanes, the tsunamis. You don't color those pictures. You don't pass them out to kindergartens to make crafts out of. When it comes to the real tragedy of human life that's been caught up in the incredible floods, just the local ones that in our own lifespan we've been able to see, you don't sing songs about those. Somehow we've taken this incredible tragedy, and I'm glad they teach it to our children. But somehow we've left it in the kindergarten classroom, and we forget this is one of the most incredible, in fact, to date, the most horrific judgment of God that has ever come on the face of the earth. And all of mankind will perish. There will be debris. And people will try to stay afloat as long as possible. I'm sure those that were more physically fit tried their best to climb to the highest places, the highest branches, the highest peaks, the highest mountains. And my bet is Noah took his three sons, his three daughters along his wife, and they were in the bottommost deck of that boat. And they prayed for the animals to be noisy because you did not want to hear what was going on outside. And no matter what the stench of livestock in that type of barge, You didn't venture up to the 18 inches of ventilation on the top deck just to see what was happening. To every friend, to every neighbor, to every classmate, to everything you know, to everything that you loved, to every place that you ever visited. And somewhere, because I learned it in childhood, all the judgment has been stripped away from it. It's a fun boat with a rainbow and a bearded dude with a bird with a leaf in its mouth. And we forget that Moses is writing to the children of Israel who are about to go into their new promised land. Moses is putting the books of the law together to allow them to see, this is your God. This is what he expects. And once again, so many of us cry out to such a harsh God, such a cruel God, a God that would punish like that. And yet it is a God that had to stand by for 1600 years and watch evil destroy itself. A God for 1600 years that had to bite his lip and watch the course of mankind. A God for the last 120 years has given them a means of salvation, and only 8 will get in the boats. It is a story of judgment, like every story of judgment in the Bible, that every place you read is covered with the grace and love of God saying, this was not my plan, and I've still provided a way. But if you want to swim it your way, if you want to do it your way, you're allowed. But this was an act of God's salvation saying, we need to start over for your sake and for my sake and the world that we were going to be born into. An act of redemption. And somewhere in the coloring books and somewhere in the crafts, I feel like we've lost this a little bit. I don't know exactly how the flood came. The Bible wants us to know it was from the heavens and it also came from the depths of the earth. It swallowed up everything. The animals, it simply said, came to Noah. That's all I got. I don't know if they all lined up in a great big row. I don't know if some are showing up months ahead of time. I don't know if every time they're building, they turn around and goes, check that out. The stripy horses, they just showed up yesterday. They're hanging out. I have no idea how this happens. What I do know is that God throughout Scripture often will use animals. He'll use a donkey. He'll use birds to feed people at times. What I do know is that when God tends to use animals, they obey. We're the only ones dumb enough not to obey God. Animals seem to get it. When he goes, hey, line up, they're like, we're lining up. You don't need the boys out there at the whip to get me into the box. God said it, donkey, go. We're the ones that stand outside. I'm not leaving my life. I'm not leaving my future. I'm not doing it his way. I got my plans. And he's like, donkey. Man, really? And it just says the animals came. Some people say, and I tend to believe, maybe he put them into a hibernation type. Because how do you have carnivores over there with chubby little bunnies? That's a snack. Maybe as soon as they got in there, God did, allowed a hibernation type thing to affect Noah. And these animals are going to be on this boat, depending on how you slice it, 340 to 370 days. That's a long time to be on this barge. Here's what I will give you. The average size of a land animal is the size of a sheep. According to the dimensions given, 1.5 million cubic feet and floor space in this, you could have fit 125,000 sheep in this boat. 125,000 sheep could have got into this barge. Now, I don't know any of this stuff, so I had to look it up, check my sources, go back and look it up again. But those that study mammals will all tell us there's 18,000 different species of mammals, birds, reptiles, and amphibians. 18,000. So if Noah didn't take two of everything, but just two of every species, male and female, that means there's 36,000 animals on this barge. On a barge that can hold 125,000 animals, which means two-thirds of the space is plenty of room for storing whatever type of food and provisions that they need. I started looking at it. I'd love for someone to give me these in case I ever need to teach it again. But I just went back to the history of dogs. It was one of those well-known animals that we all get and the many different types of breeds of dogs we have. I found four different groups that go back 2,000 years, just the time of Christ, and say there was only 4 to 6 different breeds of dogs 2,000 years ago. In 2,000 years, look at the diversity of the breeds that we have now. If Noah's not taken every breed of animal, but just every species. And from there, we have this incredible genetics and that allows them to go and reproduce and change over time. This is definitely a plausible thing to happen. Animals, that's my best shot. On the people, let me tell you what the Bible doesn't say. No one called Noah a name. Now, this may blow you away. I grew up in church where for 120 years, Noah was building an ark and people were making fun of him. That was ironclad. That's the story of Noah. It's not in the Bible. I sat down with my three kids. They live in a home where one of their family members is a pastor. The other parent teaches a women's Bible study. And I asked my three kids who've grown up going to church their whole life because they're forced to at this point. And I simply ask them, what's your favorite part of the story of Noah? And my oldest one, the 11-year-old, she's the smart one. She looked at me and she goes, Dad, I love the fact that even though people made fun of him his whole life, he kept doing what God told him to do. And I'm like, oh, that's not in the story. And I didn't have the heart to tell her. Nowhere do people mock Noah. Nowhere in the story are people banging on the door once they're inside. That was another part of the story I always got. For 120 years, people mocked Noah. Where do we get that from? Well, 2 Peter says Noah is a teacher of righteousness, a preacher of righteousness. Because of what we studied last week, we know the culture's corrupt. It's violent. It's evil. We can assume that if your neighbor starts building a project that starts to work its way out from the garage into the street and down the block about 450 feet, you're going to notice. This isn't something he can keep covered in the backyard under a tarp for a while. I mean, just the land that this guy needs to lay this barge out in is going to be huge. But we don't know how the people responded. It's true. In that society, in that culture, he could have been mocked every day and kept plotting on obedience. But the way I look at this, he could also have been some sort of local celebrity. People, where are you from? We're about three clicks away. Oh, is that anywhere close to the guy that's building that huge barge? Oh, yeah. Noah went to school with them. Have you seen it yet? Yeah, I've seen the thing. Family and I have been thinking about taking a trip there. We got guys from work that go up and down just telling us about the size of this thing. Could be. Someone builds something 450 feet long. They dedicate 120 years of their family and their life to it. Maybe he's mocked. Maybe people are taking trips to see. Here's what we do know. He's a preacher of righteousness and no one gets on the boat. Here's what we do know. He's a really good shipbuilder. He's a really lousy preacher. Now, some of you are really upset. You're going to walk into heaven one day and get hit with an oar. No, they didn't have oars either. 120 years. If this guy's telling people why he's doing it in a preacher of righteousness, not a single person shows up. 120 years of doing something simply because God told him to. And there's not a single shred of evidence that he's changing anybody else's life. 120 years of leaving whatever his dreams were, whatever his occupation was, whatever his hopes were for his boys and grandkids and the future and the family, 120 years dedicated to God. And at the end of that time, when he watched his three sons and their wives and his wife get into the barge, he stood there at the opening and realized this is the same size church I started with 120 years ago. Whew, that one had to hurt. I don't know if he was mocked. I don't know if he was a local celebrity for what he was doing. People just didn't buy the story. I do know this. In a culture that the picture was painted in the last chapter of what type of culture he grew up in, much like ours, here was a guy that heard it from God once and did it. And 7 years into it, he didn't throw in the towel because it didn't make sense. 40 years into it, he didn't raise the white flag and say, you got to show me something else. 60 years into it, when it seems like he's never going to finish this project, and not a single animal or friend has asked to come on board, he didn't stop cutting trees. 120 years of obedience. God's plan of salvation for us and his family. And that's all that gets in the boat with him. I don't know if they mocked. Nowhere does it say when the water stung and they all banged on the door and tried to get him to open it. I think the deluge came in such a drop and such an upheaval, no one had time to go in any direction. Oh, if you've watched the aftermath of the tsunamis, when people are running for their life, they're not really thinking about what direction to go. They're just running for their life. And when you've got a wall of water coming down on you like that, no one's trying to ask directions to the guy with the barge. You're just moving. It's not a picture, as adults we sing songs about. It's this incredible reality of the world that we still live in today. We have people outside that are drowning. People outside that are hell-bent on living their life their way, doing it their way. And you may be a person of righteousness. You may be someone who gives the truth. You may be someone dropping hints about who you are and the God that you believe in. You may be someone with a heart for them. And I just want to encourage you, regardless of who's coming or who's listening or not, the end is already written. The reason why Noah continues is because he knows the end of the story. He heard it from God himself. We have the end of the story. There's absolutely no doubt in my mind who wins our story. There's absolutely no doubt in my mind who populates heaven. There's absolutely no doubt in my mind that there's another judgment to come for those that want to disregard God. The only question we have is North Coast, is what do we do with it? With our life and the lives of those around us, it's why week in and week out, we simply come back to obedience. Because as we're going to find out shortly, obedience is contagious to others. So there's a lot that we don't know. I will tell you this, even though we've said it hopefully in every venue, we got a vote coming up this week. It's our Christian duty to vote. It's our American duty to vote. We live in the most incredible country. The most incredible country. North Coast, we always get hit this time of year. We've got pretty tough skin, so keep the letters coming. We're not going to read them. But we're not going to tell you who to vote for, and we're not going to tell you what to vote on. I don't believe that's the role the church plays. The role of you as the church is to go out and to make sure your voice is heard and make sure to vote. And you may go, we're in California. By the time I get off work, they're already declaring a winner. Vote. It's a simple act of obedience. It's a simple act of saying, God, you've given me a right and a freedom in this incredible country where so many died for my right to vote. I don't need to waste that. I'm going to show up and I'm going to punch it. Well, in the state we live in, it doesn't matter because the party I vote for never wins. It doesn't matter. Vote. Washington Post came out with something this past week. I absolutely loved it. Like, I read the Washington Post. Thanks for who sent it to me. On a survey of all the single dating sites, or the top 10, largest single dating sites in the U.S., on the top list of deal breakers for someone that you would want to go on a date with, being a member of the opposite political party is now the number one deal breaker when it comes to finding a significant other. It beats out religious differences. It beats out unattractiveness. It beats out someone of a low education or professional background or attainment. And on the client's list of number one turnoffs, it has a solid number one. People, it's why we don't tell you who to vote for and what to vote. We think you're mature. We think you're God-led, you're spirit-driven. Go and vote with a great Christian conscience. It's our role, the church, to reach everybody. Blue, red, purple, green, it doesn't matter to us. It is our role and our heart's desire of our current leadership team, that I don't care how you vote out there. If you ever get in the flood, our hope and prayer is you think this is a church that you can come to. Because we haven't blasted your party, your group, and your proposition with signs for the last 10 years telling you you're not wanted here. Vote. Vote your heart. Vote with the Spirit. Vote with God's character in mind. Vote. And continue to allow this be a place that says, you come who you are, no matter how you vote, no matter what you stand with. We got a God that has a ship open for you. Whew, there's a voting speech. Here we go. Never thought Noah was a voting message. Where were we? Here's a story. Some of you got really happy. Some of you got so bummed. You just lost an opportunity to tell them who to vote for. Yes, we did. We voted for Jesus. Here we go. Verse 17. We're skipping. It just talks about, again, the animals that came in where Noah is. Verse 17, for 40 days the flood kept coming on the earth, And as the waters increased, they lifted the ark high above the earth. And the waters rose and increased greatly on the earth. And the ark floated on the surface of the water. And they rose greatly on the earth. And all the high mountains under the entire heavens were covered. The waters rose and covered the mountains to a depth of more than 20 feet. Every living thing that moved on the earth perished. Birds, livestock, wild animals, all the creatures that swarm over the earth, and all of mankind. Everything on dry land that had breath of life in its nostrils died. Every living thing on the face of the earth was wiped out. Men and animals and the creatures that move along the ground and the birds of the air were wiped from the earth. Only Noah was left and those with him in the ark. And the waters flooded the earth for 150 days. Some people say this is a local flood. It is way too graphic and specific for me to buy a local flood. A local flood that covers the local mountains by 20 feet is going to have some runoff. God didn't drop a cube. Other people are going to come on this and say, why does he have to kill the animals? What did the animals do wrong? Nothing. The animals are simply the innocent tragedy and man's wickedness. Some of you today, so why does God allow evil? Why doesn't God just put a stop to evil? Because this is what it takes for God to put a stop to evil. Well, couldn't God have just put him in a timeout? He gave him 1,600 years. Well, couldn't God have just told him that, you know, he really means business this time and gave him a second chance? He gave him 120 years with the plan of salvation. I don't know how else God deals with evil. I don't know how God does with the sin virus. We get so used to our sin, our own that we take. Everyone else's that we don't commit is really bad stuff. But ours, oh, we get so comfortable with our sin. And we forget what it takes to wipe out sin. There's a narrow path of salvation. For those of obedience that want to follow, you can have it. For those of you that want to continue in your life, there's going to be a judgment. I mean, the story in page 6 is going to be the same story that Revelation is going to unfold. This is going to be the end of this. And this is what it took for God to wipe out evil. Do you really believe the flood story of the Bible is true? You know, when I first started to doubt, well, I doubted a lot of things in the Bible growing up. One of the very first things I started to doubt was the Epic of Gilgamesh when it was told to me. I didn't realize that the Babylonian from the Mesopotamian Empire, they have one of the first pieces of literature that we have in existence, has the Epic of Gilgamesh. And in the Epic of Gilgamesh, it's got this incredible hero called Unipishtim. Unipishtim. We're going to say it fast. Unipishtim. We're going to call Unip. So Unip, or Utna, builds this boat because he hears there's a flood coming. Utna, it rains for 7 days. He takes animals on the boat, his family. At the end, when the waters come down, Utnapishtim, his boat rests on a mountaintop. He lets the animals and his people come out, and they start the earth all over again. While he's waiting for the waters to go down, he opens a little window and he sends out a raven. He also sends out a dove. The very first thing he does is make sacrifices when he leaves his ship. And the Bible is just one of over 200 flood narratives we have from the religions of the world. And you're going to buy that? Every religion has a flood narrative in it somewhere. Utnapishtim, one of the major differences was he hired workers and he gave them beer and ale to take in the boat with them. That was a good addition to the story. By the way, Noah could have hired workers. Doesn't say it was just him and the boys that built it. Another difference with Utnapishtim, that he was allowed to become a god afterwards. And he filled half his boat with gold and silver. Little different spins on it. Over 200 cultures have flood narratives. Boy specifically cites the legends of the Samokuba tribe of New Guinea, the Athapascan Indians of America, the Papago Indians of Arizona, the Brazilian tribes, the Peruvian Indians, the African Hottentots, the natives of Greenland, the native Hawaiian Islanders have a flood narrative, the Hindus, the Chinese, the Egyptians, the Greeks, the Persians, the Australian natives, the Welsh, the Celts, the Druids, the Siberians, the Lithuanians. The Puranists, both Hindu and Buddhist texts, carry on a flood narrative. Deucalion, a Greek mythology of the great flood hero that survives and starts civilization. The Kichi of the Mayans of Central America have a flood narrative. The Musca from South America, from the region of Colombia, have a flood narrative. Out of these 200 narratives, 88% of them describe a favored family that will make it through. 70% attribute survival to a boat. 95% say the sole cause of the catastrophe is a judgment of their God. 66 say the disaster is due to the wickedness of men. 67% record that animals also get on the boat. 57% describe the survivors end up on a mountain. Many of the accounts also specifically mention birds being sent out, a rainbow, and 8 persons being saved. Your Bible is simply one of 200 fictional narratives that you can buy into if you want. And that's how it was presented to me in my world religions class. Until you step back and go, wait a second. 200 religions have stories of the flood. To me, that doesn't discredit anything. To me, it sounds like there might have been a flood. Follow me here, critic. Just because there is a Toyota, a Honda, a Nissan, a Chevy, an Oldsmobile, and a Porsche, does that mean there couldn't have possibly been a Henry Ford? In fact, and you can debate depending on Olds or Benz or whoever created the first car. Go with your motorheads on that. We'll just say Henry Ford, the first at least assembly line of automobiles. Because there are now so many different types of automobiles does not discredit that Henry Ford made the first manufacturing line of automobiles. In fact, it points to somewhere somebody started building cars. 200 different religions carry a flood narrative. Almost all with the exact same events of Genesis chapter 6, 7, and 8, which tells me somewhere in their history of man and anthropology, oh, this story was passed down. Now, it might have gotten to different continents and different people groups, but I love the fact that when you study religions, this, and you know what other story most religions carry? A virgin birth and a God that came to earth. Because if there is a truth, and there is an enemy that seeks to discredit the truth, I promise you he's going to go after those stories. I love the story of the flood. Okay, what we do know. Give you some stuff to write down to be able to take with you. What we do know is this. Godly obedience will set you apart from the crowd. There is no doubt in my mind. He was not one of hundreds of dudes building a 450-foot boat. What are you working on there, Noah? I got a 450-foot boat. Really? Dude, the guy down the street's building a 450-foot boat. Did you get one of those plans by mail to build the 400? Everyone's into that. Dude, you followed God to His specifics and His details. This is going to set you apart from the crowd. It is true then. It is true today. We have a tough time with this. I want my God, but I don't want Him to make me separate from the culture I live in. I want my God and I want to raise my family to be followers of Christ, but I don't want us to be weird. I don't want to be mocked. And I don't want my kids to be mocked if that happened. Hey, Jim, I hear your old man turned 600 the other day. Yeah. I heard he lost it. What do you mean? I heard he's building a barge for every animal of the world. You know what amazes me about this story that I never got before is number 2. Godly obedience will encourage others to follow. Parents, listen to me on this one. God did not tell His sons what was happening. Nowhere in the text. God did not speak to the daughters-in-law about what was happening. And God did not tell Noah's wife what was happening. Adult kids followed a really old man into the most unexplainable, craziest of ideas. How does that happen? Unless Noah was a man that led his family with character, integrity, he was trustworthy. And even though all 3 of his adult boys sat down and said, "Pop, hey, forgive us. You're going to have to run this by it again one more time. We're going to all quit our jobs and start doing what with you?" Really? How many of you struggle with your kids taking out the trash? Try a 120-year barge project. There is something about this guy's obedience and the way he led his family, where his wife said, "Honey, are you sure this was God?" Without a doubt. "Honey, this is going to be tough in the day and age we live in." "Babe, I'm not saying you got to stay with me." "Oh, I'm not leaving. We'll start tomorrow." Well, in that day and age, the women probably couldn't have left. Oh, yeah. Job's wife, her advice, curse God and die. See ya. It's like, whoops. That's going to take some counseling. Some hurtful words you don't get over. Oh, for parents, that we don't bring our kids to church, that we don't bring our kids to hear messages of Christ, but that we live it out the other 6.5 days in such a way where that is all they need to follow. And say, "Honey, I know the world's not going to like you on this one." Oh, to sit down my oldest one and just go, "Okay, first junior high dance. Whew. Say, let me tell you a few things. You know we're different from everyone there, don't you?" She goes, "Yeah, Dad." "You know why we're different, don't you?" "Yeah, Dad." "Is that okay with you?" "Oh, yeah, Dad." We had dinner a couple nights ago, and I sat down simply because three different groups, and if you're here, it's quite okay. Three different groups interrupted our dinner at a restaurant just to stop by the table and introduce themselves and say hi. And I looked at the kids and said, "Is it still okay that this happens when we go out?" And they're still young enough that they don't know any better. And they're like, "Yeah, Dad, it's fun being famous." And I'm like, "You just keep thinking that." But to have a little conversation of why we're going to be different than others, you know that, right? "Yeah, Dad." "Yeah." Oh, parents, there is something I found as a father in a childhood story of Noah that never resonated with me before. To live your life in such a way where it encourages others to follow. To live your life in such a way where if it doesn't make sense to society, if it doesn't make sense to them, you just go, "Trust me on this one. My kids trust me more than God right now." And they should. They're 7 and 10 and 11. They haven't experienced much of life, maturity. They haven't experienced much of God, but they trust Dad. Dad's physical. Dad's there on a daily basis. They're starting to see this being put together. And my job right now is to take the trust they have in me and to tell them who I'm following and why that's far more trustworthy than a dad who's going to let you down more often than not. Oh, parents, moms, dad, there is something here in the story of Noah. And not just his three boys said, "Pop, we're in." But you had three daughters-in-law who at least one of them should have thrown up their hands and go, "I should have listened to my mom. This is the most jacked up family. She said this was going to happen. Forget trying to figure out who we're seeing at Christmas. We're going to live in a boat for 370 days? I'm out of here. I'm going back to my tribe. I'm going back to my clan. I'm going back to the Nephilim." I mean, there's stuff happening out there I'm missing out on. But you had three girls from different upbringings, from different families, in a culture where everything is going haywire, saw enough about stepdad, father-in-law, and mother-in-law, saw enough to say, "We're with you." You realize your families aren't coming. That's their choice. You can stay with them. "I've seen enough of this family to know I'm here." On every one of our campuses, in Carlsbad at least, and then Fallbrook and on Vista, we have this rock going on, reaching orphans and children in crisis. There's booths set up. One of the beauties about North Coast, it's a positive, it's a negative. One of the downsides is we're so big. Unless you're in a growth group, sometimes you can get lost in this. I get that. The positive is we're so big that we can do a lot of damage when a few of us decide to all do something together. In reaching orphans and children in crisis, we live in a day and age where there is a flood going on in our own culture, and the innocent victims are the littlest ones. And we have got booths set up in all of our plaza of organizations right here in North County that are just saying, "We need Christian families. We need people that may have your family somewhat together, maybe a couple extra rooms in your ark, maybe some extra provisions in your cupboard to say, we can take in another critter that's been caught up in the flood right now." It can happen in a myriad of ways. A one-year commitment of just mentoring a kid that doesn't have a parent in North County. Someone of maturity just dripping something into him that's giving him something different from the world that's being inundated in him right now. A one-year mentoring, that's out there. Some of you have been wondering about being foster homes, foster parents. You raised your kids. We got an empty room. Maybe we should do something for a while. Oh, that's going to be tough. And then if we fall in love with the kids, it's going to be tough to let them go. But we could probably be involved for the rest of their life. Oh, that's a huge commitment. Oh, it's huge. Could be a 120-year obedience issue on this one. Go out there and just pick up the brochures. Go up and just say, what's it take to be a foster family? Simple as just working at camps with kids that don't have parents here in North County. They need camp counselors. There's others going on. Safe Families. I love this one. Safe Families is all over the world. Katie Couric did a big story on it. They're trying to start one here in North County. What it is, they have a motto, any child at any time. There are so many, especially with the military base. A father's deployed. A mom has some health problems. She needs to go in the hospital for a while. They have three kids. Who takes care of the kids? She has to turn them over to CPS, social services. There's no one there to watch the kids for a week or two until mom gets better. Some of these may be 30 days. Some of these are just a weekend. Some of these is simply an accident that happened. There's a family emergency that happened. And they don't have a place to put kids. Safe Families is looking for Christian homes to simply say, hey, we're going to call you up and say we got an 8-year-old boy and we got a 6-year-old sister. They're going to need a place for about 5 to 6 days. They need an ark. They've just been hit with the flood. Do you got room? You're interested, just go out and pick up something and say, what's it look like? Oh, I would love to see North Coast Church become the place in North County that's known for. You got orphans? You got children that are hurting? You want to adopt? There's a booth out there for that. You got kids that are caught up in the backwash of someone else's sin or tragedy? We're here. We're here. On every one of our campuses, we're going to give you time after the service. Go by and just look at some booths. You're not committing. You're not going to walk up. I'd like to. They're not going to hand you a kid and run away. And you're like, oh, no. Just go and say, what's it look like? Reaching orphans and children in crisis. Rock is happening this weekend. Take time to say, if you've ever had a thought or idea of adopting, being a foster, being a mentor, being a counselor in any way, being a safe home for anywhere from a weekend to 30 days, say, we're here. Man, I challenge you to check it out. Godly obedience will also bring salvation to others. Salvation to others. It is this obedience that brings God's plan and keeps it alive in this world. It is Noah's obedience that saves his family and his kids. It is Noah's obedience standing out, standing apart from the crowd in such a crooked generation that allows God still to bring a line of Messiah for the rest of us. God's primary tool of reaching your family member, your neighbor, your coworker, that person in your life you care about is you. It always has been. It always will be. We are the church. We are plan A. There is no plan B. And by the church, I mean the people of God, not a building or warehouses. It is our obedience, living in this generation, following God regardless of how many years I've been doing it, it doesn't seem to pay off. That causes someone else to say, hey, I need to talk to someone. I think it may be you. I love the amount of people I meet at North Coast and say, how'd you get here? Oh, we were new to the area. We had bad plumbing. We called a plumber and he started talking about church and so we showed up. I'm like, really? Yeah, some dude bending over toilet bowl got us here. And I'm like, that's awesome. Someone else, oh, we love, how'd you guys get here? Oh, about 6 months ago, we were just at Starbucks hanging out in line, started talking to some people. They sat down at the table next to us, started talking. Next thing you know, we invited. We didn't really want to come, but we felt bad saying no, so we showed up. Godly obedience next. Godly obedience can get uncomfortable. I want to give you these three quickly. Godly obedience can get uncomfortable. Godly obedience can get smelly. I don't know a better way to put that. It just stinks sometimes. Following God just stinks sometimes. Godly obedience can get uncomfortable, it can get smelly, and it can get incredibly painful. His family is incredibly uncomfortable. Literally, it stinks. I don't care if the animals are hibernating. This place stinks. 3 floors of a zoo and you're living somewhere probably on the bottom, I'm sure by month 3, you're up by the ventilation crack every day. It stinks. If somebody once told you following God is going to be amazing, the best thing you ever did, what they're trying to say is, it's something when you really walk with God, you'll never regret. But I hope they included, but it doesn't mean it'll be easy. God may take you through hell to populate heaven. Is that okay with you? And God may put you in one of the darkest times and some of the hurtful situations, or to watch what cancer does in order to reach someone who had to be there in that dark time also. Oh, it was obedience, but it wasn't easy and it wasn't fun. I promise you that. See, obedience can save us from the storm, or obedience can take us through the storm. And sometimes obedience in my life means I avoid the stuff that I shouldn't be falling into. And other times, we just get rocked and God says, hold on tight. This will be 40 days of rain, 150 days of flood, another 150 days of the water receding, another couple months before you're able to leave. This one's going to hurt. You're not going to want to look out the window for a while. And imagine when the water started to recess, the first time he gazed at a landscape of nothing but devastation, how lonely he felt. And God said, that's my boy. That's my girl. That's what a family looks like in this day and age. The choice we're left with is simply, do we trust God enough to give him our future? Do you really trust God enough to give him your future? Your hope? Your dreams, your family, your kids, your loved ones. Do you really trust God enough? Man, I had another chapter to read about letting a raven go because it's a scavenger, and then a dove, and then the dove that brought back an olive branch, and somehow we've made that a picture of peace and acceptance when it is one of the most tragic signs of what God has just caused in judgment. I don't know how we got there in our society. About the very first thing that Noah does when he gets off the ark is he sacrifices an animal. They're close to extinction, by the way. He's got two male and female, a couple extra clean ones, and he's going to kill some. Another act of saying, God, my future and everything, this is all on you. It's the next chapter. Read it, because we'll pick up chapter 9 after that and show that Noah wasn't flawless. But we live in a day and age where God is crying out for families to realize you're supposed to be different from the world. And if the world hated our Christ, it will probably hate us at times. You've come to a church where we're not going to pull any punches on that. If the Scripture teaches it, we're going to say it. We may apologize if that offends you, but we won't apologize if that's the Word of God. And may we be a church that makes sure our ark is in a place where our people are following God, and then we have room for those around us to be generous outside of that and to take some in. Father, may you continue to find favor on us, not because we deserve it, not because we've earned it, but we are fallen, broken people who are done treading water our way. God, may you find each and every one of us coming to a point where we gave up on our life, our hope, our dreams, and said, I'm doing it your way. God, I thank you for a church filled with recovering, broken people. It took 7 days to get Noah into the ark, 40 days of flood, and then 300 some days before renewal could happen. God, we have a church filled with people that have blown their lives in a short amount of time, but it has taken years to recover. It has taken years to build back up. It is a struggle to walk in obedience. God, may you give us the courage and grace to walk, holding on to your truth simply because it is truth. And God, may you find us faithful. In Jesus' name, amen.
So before we close, if you want more information about this teaching or any other teaching, just go online, www.northcoastchurch.com. Or you can come see us at 2405 North Santa Fe Avenue in Vista, California. Check the website for times of services. And now let's get back to some closing thoughts from Pastor Chris.
So as you go, I think we ran out of time before doing it justice, but as best as we could, an adult version of the children's story. The guy Noah that Jesus believed in, that the New Testament author said, that is the guy that set the standard for obedience. And one that now we can take home and look at and say, how am I doing with this? Do I give into our culture and the world? Or if God says it, do I do it? No questions asked. Salvation may just depend on it, not yours alone, but those that God wants to impact through you. On your way out, the lines may be long out there. If you got kids, pick them up first and then come back. But on the end of that line, there are thousands of kids in North County that are looking for help right now. I really think we can make a dent in that one, North Coast. So if that's on your heart, take advantage of that as you go. We'll see you next week, everybody.